Everybody, welcome back, Iowa. You're listening to Around the House. My name is Tim Heddy, and I got my friend Rod Fox over here. How's it going?
Good morning, Tim. It's going well.
Getting a little bit of rain this week.
We did. For those people who never thought we'd see any of the wet stuff again, it is back.
And they're talking about, I think, what, half of next week?
Right.
They're talking about it raining.
Right.
So.
The weather patterns have changed. Cold fronts are coming in. Some of that warm weather as it mixes. Guess what? We get a little precip.
You know, they're talking about it being so dry this winter and next year. And, you know, I'm no meteorologist. But if they can't predict what's going to happen 24 hours from now, what makes them think they can predict what's going to happen 6 months from now?
I got to get me one of them jobs. Be wrong all the time and still get paid.
Yep. Yep. No. Well, you're wrong half the time. And
well,
still get paid,
I know. So. Yeah. But I want to be wrong all the time and get paid. No.
Yep.
Now, it is interesting. You know, we've become complacent with, you know, the way the weather pattern has been. And then all of a sudden we start to see, you know, moisture coming in, and people who have had wet basements in the past are almost, it's like they're reliving a pain they thought had gone away.
Right.
And no, it's not gone away. You've got to fix the problem.
It's like not doing anything about changing the oil in your car until the motor blows up.
Right. And then, you know, being shocked that something happened.
So. Yeah, if you've got a finished basement, and we're getting these calls, you know, and we haven't had like an exorbitant amount of rain. It's just been steady.
Right.
And so we're getting these calls, well, my sump pump failed, you know, my basement's getting wet, and well, you know, why? Okay, we'll come out, and we have service guys, we'll take care of you and everything.
Right.
But then you get out there, and our service guys are looking at pumps that are 20 years old. Well, you know, I got 20 years out of that pump, ain't I great? Well, not really, because it just cost $10,000 worth of damage in your basement.
Yeah, exactly. You've been dodging a bullet for so many years. It's you know, when you look at a mechanical failure, you know, there are things that you can do to prevent them. And obviously, they can break down. But being protected with a battery backup so you can be alerted to the fact that, hey, I'm having a primary pump failure is going to save you thousands of dollars in damage that can occur.
And you know what? I don't care if you have insurance or not.
Right.
Anybody that's ever gone through it, it is not worth it.
Right. I mean, that's the one thing in our life we pay. We pay it because we hope we never have to use it.
Right.
You know, but anyone that's ever had to activate it because of, and, you know, we had the story earlier this year, late last year, earlier this year, about Tom, one of the guys that works at our company.
Oh, yeah.
Of the extreme damage that he had occurred just because of a bathtub backup.
And I think that they're put back together now.
I'm not sure.
If you don't remember this conversation, you can get on our archive radio shows, and we'll talk about that in a bit. But what happened was they had a plumbing issue on the second floor of this house.
Right.
So, you know, gravity is, you know, Mother Nature's gift to us, and so water runs downhill. So it pretty much destroyed their bathroom upstairs, their dining room, their kitchen, and their living room on the main floor, on down to the furnace. It destroyed the furnace. I mean, this was a major, major thing. It probably cost the insurance company like $30,000.
Oh, yeah. And that was just it. When it left the second floor and got into the floor joist system and the ceiling on the first floor, you know, it wasn't a drop ceiling. It was, you know, drywall. Right. So it spread the water out. It wasn't just a singular location where the water was coming down. The water made it out to the exterior walls where it was burning out. I think he had an alarm system that got fried. You know, so much more damage than you would ever thought actually would have happened.
So, yeah. So, you know, plumbing leaks, there's not much you can do. I mean, it's not like there's preventive maintenance for your pipes.
Right.
And I don't remember exactly what happened. Maybe they left the water on for all I know.
Well, it was. I know it was a they were looking at trying to clear a clog that was in the tub. And his wife unfortunately left the water running while they were gone, thinking that that was going to help drain it, and it didn't work out that way.
So they probably got lucky.
Well,
you know, that the insurance company would even cover that, because if I was the insurance man, I may have a problem with that. So, anyways, last week, was it last week we were talking about fire prevention?
We were. We had a lot of, it was fire prevention week. We talked about some things, and I do have a follow up that I want to touch base on here in a little bit. About carbon monoxide. I think that we really want to touch about that. But, excuse me, those people that who didn't realize it was fire safety or fire prevention week, you know, it's always a great time to make sure that your smoke detectors, carbon monoxide detectors, are operational, cleaned, batteries replaced, ready to go, and take a look around. Maybe you don't have enough.
you had made the comment that your batteries in your smoke detector should be changed every time you change the time on your clocks.
Absolutely. With daylight savings time. Anytime you change that, change the batteries out.
That's so you're looking at every 6 months.
That's exactly right.
And, you know, there's a lot of tragedy out there. So why don't you go ahead and talk about what you got for carbon monoxide.
Well, some of the questions, I don't think people realize how deadly carbon monoxide is. You know, you hear about maybe a tragedy where a family inadvertently, gotten sick because of a poisoning issue with the HVAC system. And that's why, and we've had Roger Fauchon from Shaw Heating and Cooling, and, you know, we believe, like he does, preventative maintenance, preventative servicing is us finding a problem before the problem finds you.
Right.
And, you know, we're talking about damage that happens to your home when, you know, you don't change the pumps, you don't have battery backups, going through all this heartache. What he's talking about in servicing your HVAC system is, you know, truly a deadly situation can arise if you get a crack in the heat exchanger. These things have to be checked by certified, trained individuals. You want to...
Well, and I can tell you about a situation we had even at our office where we get our stuff checked because we just simply believe that that's the thing to do.
Right.
And so, you know, it's starting to get a little cooler out, so we decided we're going to get the furnace checked in our office and, you know, have the filters changed. It's up on the roof.
Yeah.
So it's not like I can just climb up there and change the filter.
No, yeah. The kind of system we have is to handle the kind of building we have is not a normal residential furnace.
So they came in and they told us that it's carbonating a little bit, and they broke it down to, like, parts per million. I don't know what that means, but whatever. You know, and they said it's well within range, but eventually this is going to get worse and you're going to have to do something about it. And it was actually Roger Fausch that from Shaw Heating and Cooling, and he replaced our furnace.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I thought it was a pretty reasonable deal anyways, but he says, you know, get it now before it starts getting cold.
Well, because, do you know, is it going to make it through this next winter? And all of a sudden now you're going to have the building, you know, cold for a day while they're trying to, you know, do it, you know, in extreme weather conditions. But... you know, what carbon monoxide is, and I'm just going to do a little background on it, is a deadly colorless, odorless, poisonous gas. And it is produced from incomplete burning off of the fuels like coal, wood, charcoal, oil, kerosene, propane, and natural gas. So carbon monoxide is just not something that you look at to say, well, it's associated with my furnace. It can be associated with various different types of fueling, and so
even burning candles.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Because you know you're changing the atmospheric conditions by the off gassing of the candles, and you know, I think Roger had this conversation with us, several months ago, that people don't realize the number of candles that they burn. And you and I have both been in homes where all of a sudden you walk in and you're thinking, what am I, in some monastery or somewhere? They burn candles for everything?
Who doesn't like the smell of candles? I mean, I love that. You go in and, you got that nice cinnamon smell or something.
Sure. There's ways to produce that now with a lot of these flameless heating elements, like a light bulb that can heat up the wax. And you can still get the odors, but you're not off-gassing carbon monoxide.
Right.
So having a carbon monoxide detector in your house is paramount. However, I don't want people to think that a carbon monoxide detector and a smoke detector act in the same manner. Smoke detector is a constant monitoring of the atmospheric conditions, and when smoke is detected immediately, I mean, we all done that. You burn a pizza, your wife burns a roast, whatever, and all of a sudden the smoke detector goes off. So it was an immediate result. There was a change to the point of saying, hey, listen, there's something going on. I'm going to alert. Carbon monoxide detectors do not work that way. Carbon monoxide detectors will monitor the level of contaminants within a certain point, but it does it over such a time period that when the alarm is actually starting to go off means it's time for you to exit that property. Now, I wouldn't say a smoke detector going off means that you've got time to hang out either, but what the carbon monoxide detector is saying is then if you stay in this environment, you are going to be stricken, be dead, whatever the case may be.
Well, the old adage, you know, it's the last thing you're ever going to hear. I mean, I think he made that point when he was here is,
Right. There are different types of detectors, some that are much more expensive. I have one. What that will do is act much more like a smoke detector. The minute you have a change in the carbon monoxide levels within your home to a level that they know is increasing. So it's we're starting to see a change from the normal conditions where the CO is actually starting to go up. It alerts then. It says, hey, there's something going on. You should get it checked out.
When you say more expensive, are we talking about $5 instead of $2?
No, we're talking a couple hundred bucks.
I mean, how much is the cheap one?
Well, I mean, you can get any kind of a carbon monoxide detector, you know, any of the box stores for, what, $20?
Everything in my house is electric, so I don't have them.
I just bought a couple of packs, along with the one that I have, you know, the $200 one. I also have replaced and put in the standard carbon monoxide detectors, and I replaced a couple of smoke detectors actually about 2 weeks ago. And the packs, I think, were... like $30 for one carbon monoxide detector and one smoke detector. So, $60, I got, two more of each. I've got a total of five smoke detectors and four carbon monoxide detectors in my house.
Well, we got to get to a break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about that and where you've placed them. So we'll be right back with more Around the House. All righty, welcome back, Iowa. You're listening to Around the House, and Rod was finished up the last segment talking about carbon monoxide detectors and the differences in them. And again, I've got all electric in my house, Rod, so I don't want to sound like a moron here.
No.
But can you talk a little bit about carbon monoxide detectors as related to where you placed them?
Yeah, absolutely. What you want to be able to do is you want to obviously have them in the utility area, anywhere where you're going to have something that could potentially off-gas or not completely burn. So if you have a wood-burning stove or a fireplace in one room, and then you've got your utility room downstairs where maybe you have a gas furnace or gas water heater. But also you want to be able to have it in an area where, like, in a hallway, where you're going to be. The smoke detector should actually be in every bedroom. There should be a smoke detector in every bedroom. And then again, in the utility area.
In the bedroom, not out in the hallway.
Yeah, correct. You can have one in the hallway also. This is one of those things where I'm always going to say more is better.
Right. And for $5, good smoke detectors.
Right.
And they all work off the same principle. It's dust in the air, from what I think, right? Just particles in the air.
Right. It's just doing, a simple test of the actual carbons that come into the air, and the sensor will determine what that is. But we have so much, some of our homes are so broken up sometimes that we think, oh, I should be good with one or two. Literally, this is not something you want to skimp on. If you've got a bedroom downstairs, make sure that that's protected. Again, last week we talked about egress windows, with fire prevention. Don't skimp. Have an abundance, and the way the codes are now, they should be hardwired in to the home's power system. Now, I'm obviously in new home construction, that's the way the codes are. And if you're doing any kind of remodeling, if you're going to do some remodeling, they require that for it to pass inspection, it has to be hardwired in. Folks, I'm telling you, a 9-volt battery with one, don't just go, well, I'm not going to spend the money to get the hardware. Just get the battery operated once. Just get the battery operated once. You're going to last about 5 years.
Something is better than nothing.
Absolutely. That's just it. Something is better than nothing. So because on average about 170 people are killed in the United States each year from carbon monoxide. A lot of the deaths that are being recorded, which is kind of an unusual aspect, something that I didn't think about until I read about it, was that most of these deaths, or the majority of them, happen during a power outage. Because people don't ventilate their homes properly, and they're starting to use wood-burning fireplaces, candles, things like this that actually aren't as efficient as their furnace system is in burning off the excessive fuel.
So you've got a carbon monoxide detector that is hardwired into the home.
Right.
The power goes out, so that's obviously inoperable now.
Well, hopefully it's got a battery backup. But again, we talked about it earlier. Carbon monoxide detectors aren't like smoke detectors. They're not the immediate response. When the carbon monoxide starts going up, it's saying, hey, guess what? Last thing you hear before you, should be exiting your house is that alarm going off. The last thing you'll ever hear is the alarm going off. So when people have power outages and they're starting to rely on all these, some people start up generators. They don't vent properly because typically the generator's not going to be sitting outside. It's probably going to be sitting in the garage. Now, where's that exhaust going? Are you going to have your garage door open a little bit to get the exhaust going? So people induce you know, their own deaths. That's right. That, you know, it's not like an HVAC system where, you know, the heat exchanger just, you know, got a crack in it, and unbeknownst to them, you know, the last thing they heard was the carbon monoxide detector.
These are good points because, for one thing, battery backups, you have to understand how batteries work. It is very rough on a battery to sit there and never get used and continually be charged and maintained.
Right.
I mean, very rough on a battery. So if you've got a hardwired carbon monoxide, even with a battery backup, and it's, say, 5 years old, the likelihood of that battery being good, and I'm not bashing the entire industry and the battery industry and everything else. I'm just saying these are things to be concerned with.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the lifespan of these items, don't expect them to last forever. That's ridiculous. You wouldn't drive the same car for 50 years.
That's
Let's
right.
not have the same smoke detectors and carbon monoxide detectors up.
Well, you know, and I spoke about, you know, 170 people on average die each year in the United States. You know, the CDC estimates that several thousand people every year go to the hospital to be treated with carbon monoxide poisoning. So, you know, 170 people die, several thousand are now going to be treated. This is not a small issue. I mean, it's something people have to take serious. If you're, and again, if you're going to utilize your fireplace during this wintertime, have it inspected. Have it, you know, not only it being a fire hazard, but the carbon monoxide.
If you don't know how properly ventilated.
Right. If you don't know how to operate that thing, don't be burning something inside your house thinking that, oh, it just, you know, it should automatically, you know, the smoke and carbon monoxide should automatically just go up the stack. It doesn't work that way. You got to make sure that every piece of equipment that you have that can produce this kind of deadly poison is operating in its best manner, so you don't have this risk.
You know, this goes back to what we talk about almost every week. We have to think about our home as a system, and the system is built of all these other systems. You know, your HVAC system, your windows as a system, your basement as a system, your insulation as a system. Every single thing is a system. And it's put together, and it's a series of different systems. So every time we change something, you brought up fireplaces.
Right.
People add fireplaces to brand new homes, and you know, after the home is built, and then they don't properly ventilate them. And I don't know how many I don't have the statistics with me, but I don't know how many tragedies every year are equated to people doing this.
Right.
Where if they had a qualified guy come out, you know, and you know, take everything into consideration.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, telling your kids that, hey, we got to go to grandma's house. I want you to get in the back of the truck and stand up the whole way. You'd never do that because the risk of your kids getting injured or your family members getting injured is greatly increased, right?
I mean, you stand up the whole way.
Yeah, stand up the whole way in the back of the truck, okay? So now you've got a product that you lives in your house and you take it for granted that, you know, you're not going to have any risk when there really is. You wouldn't leave your family at risk to do something foolish as what I just said, that kind of an analogy of riding in the back of it or standing up in the back of a truck. If you have these kind of products in your home, make sure they're operational. The U.S. Consumer Product Safety Council or Commission has a lot of great information on carbon monoxide detectors, the questions and answers, so you can go through and find out more information. The internet, like we've said, is a great tool in seeking out information immediately. Mm-hmm. And so I would highly recommend that people go to the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission site on the internet.
And as you brought up a little bit earlier, the bedrooms and the basements. And you and I, we're in the basement business. So we've been in, I mean, I figure in my career, I've probably been in 5,000 or 6,000 basements, you know.
Yeah.
And there's so many bedrooms in basements, and I don't want to beat a dead horse here about egress windows. And I'm not, you know, there's a lot of companies out there that do them, so I'm not trying to put a plug in for Midwest Basement Systems here. I'm just saying that it's a little risky to have somebody sleeping in a basement with no egress.
Oh, absolutely.
And I've seen hundreds of basement bedrooms with no way to get out of the basement outside of the stairs that go up and usually land in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Where we know that 95% or 99% or it's some huge percentage of house fires start in the kitchen.
Right.
So,
and to that point, of the people that actually do have them, how many have actually ever tried to get out that window?
Right.
I got to tell you, it's not that difficult, but if you're in a panic and you need
things to change.
That's right. You need to open that sash or remove it, you know. And for people to understand what a sash is, it's the actual movable part of the window where the glass is. And if it's got a screen on it, you know, yeah, just punch through that thing. Don't be trying to open it up so that you're not going to damage the screen. Now, if you're practicing, obviously you don't want to do this, but you have to understand that you can easily pop any screen right out of the frame. It's not, you know, it's just a small.
Yeah, there's just a little bead of rubber
that's
holding it in. And most screens are built exactly the same.
Yeah, so but practice. I mean, going back to what we said, you know, have a plan, practice that plan, talk it over with the family. And just like we've talked about with changing batteries in smoke detectors and carbon monoxide detectors, practice your fire escape plan.
Yeah. You know, and batteries have come a long ways, but even in, you know, Midwest Basement Systems puts thousands of battery backup pumps in every year.
Right.
And we even say that the batteries are good for, what, 3 years?
Correct.
You know, and these are good quality batteries. This is top of the line stuff.
Right.
And we still say these batteries are good for for 3 years. Everybody thinks that because my Sears Diehard is guaranteed for 60 months, that that's the standard for batteries. And it's really not. It's a different world. It's not like being in your car where this battery gets taken out and exercised on a daily basis. You have to understand that this battery is sitting in the basement being maintained and not really have any kind of load on it, you know, until it just goes defunct.
Right.
So, you know, at least have them serviced. And we recommend, you know, 5 years for a pump.
Yes.
And I'm saying 5 years for a pump. I don't care if you've had that pump in your basement for 20 years and it's still pumping water. You are on borrowed time.
That's exactly right.
You know, anything after 5 years is borrowed time. Doesn't make any difference how much the pump is, you know, and I think pumps are pretty reasonably priced.
Oh, absolutely.
For what they do and what they are, I don't think pumps are out of line at all.
No, not at all.
But you have to average that over the five-year period. So, anyways, we got to get to another break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some more exciting things going on in the basement repair industry. So, we'll be right back. Alrighty, welcome back, Iowa. You're listening to Around the House, and we were talking about fire safety and everything. And I think we've said enough there.
Right.
Hopefully, people take, you know, some kind of notice.
Yeah, and take the initiative, get out there, practice. You know, if you've never even thought about it, develop a plan. There's plenty of websites. If you feel like, hey, I'd really like to talk to somebody, go down to the fire department, local fire department. I'm sure that they either have some literature or can direct you or help you even come up with a plan.
Right.
So
now I want to talk about a little bit about employment.
Right.
Okay. As it relates to Midwest Basement Systems, because we are looking for people. We're usually in a growth phase. I mean, I think it's a pretty well-run company.
Yes.
If I could pat myself on the back.
I'll do it for you. It's a great run.
But, you know, we're usually in a growth phase, and we're always looking for good people. Now, also, I'm really trying to get somebody to come on this show, and I think I have a possibility of doing that next week. To talk about what this healthcare means, this Obamacare means for employment. And I want to make sure, now I know you, Rod, and I know if we head down that road, you will sit there and talk politics for hours and hours and hours. And I would too, but not on this show.
Right.
So I've actually found somebody that has somewhat of an unbiased view.
Somebody who can break down what the law actually means.
Just what it means without any kind of bias.
Take the emotion out of it, you know, and it's difficult to do, but tell us exactly what is going to take place in 2014 when the full implementation of this hits.
Right.
From that, you can draw whether or not you think it's a great idea, whether you think it's a really bad idea yourself, but to understand the facts, I think, you know, in this election cycle, it's all about emotion. I mean, you know, you can't get on the radio or turn on the radio, turn on the TV, anything, Facebook, whatever, Twitter, everything's political right now. You got to vote for this person, got to vote for this person. This person's done such a bad day, this person's lying about this. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the facts of what's actually going
What's coming?
What's coming.
I mean, these things are being certain percentage of these things are being implemented now.
And what it's going to do for the industry, and I think the gentleman that you are speaking about is going to be able to come in and just say, okay, let's just talk about the facts.
Yeah.
I don't need
this
to spin.
This is what's going to happen.
I don't need to spin if you're happy with what's coming or if you're upset with what's coming. Both sides. Let's break down what the facts are. and explain to what it's going to do, A, to employers.
Right.
B, to people like me, just an employee, you know, what the potential things that are going to come up, a retired person, what, you know, what these kind of things. The thing we take for granted the most, and how, and our ability to A, select a doctor, B, just go, you know, if you got health insurance, go to whoever it is you want, following whatever policy you currently have. And by the implementation of this new healthcare plan, what some of those levels of expectation that we've had,
right,
we won't have anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that's the facts that need to come out.
And yeah, people need to know. I heard a guy say the other day, it's actually this guy, that like the Mayo Clinic, there's a pretty good percentage of the people that go to the Mayo Clinic that are from Canada,
yeah,
and are paying cash,
yeah,
because they cannot get the care there,
right,
that they would like to have. So, you yeah. know, and I'm really, really, really trying to keep this out of, you know, personal bias and stuff like that. I just want people to know.
Right. I mean, you can make your own determination
yeah.
after you understand the facts.
Right.
If you don't know what the facts are and all you've been listening to is a spin, yeah, I can spin anything to make
right.
it seem like it's a great thing for anyone.
You know, and I was talking to my 18-year-old daughter the other day, and she was telling me some of the things that are on Facebook,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I was in disbelief. And I, you know, most politicians are not to be trusted anyways. We know that.
Right.
You know, but some of the things that were being said about both parties, you know. And keep up on what's going on. I try not to talk about it on this show, at least
right.
my personal views. This is not a political show. We're not here to sway votes or anything else.
Yeah.
So I try to keep it out of here. Matter of fact, I got to throw away half of your notes most of the time when we come in here because I don't want to talk about that stuff.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, this guy's talking about this guy. This really isn't true. You know, this guy's talking about this guy. You know, it kind of goes both ways.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
not true
Absolutely.
Either.
Absolutely. I never would say, hey, we have you know, one so upstanding ethical individual that, you know, every
ethical.
Word that comes out of their mouth, I can believe wholeheartedly.
Right.
You know, Tim, and I gave you a copy of an audio CD on a book that I had bought and read, and I'm going to put a plug in for it because
sure.
it's
Go
a non-biased book. It's very simple and very easy to read. So, folks, if you got a pen and paper, want to write this down, the author's name is Andy Andrews, and he wrote a book called How Do You Kill 11 Million People? Now, the title itself is a little bit, you know,
and that's why it kept me
discerning.
From, because I really don't like that kind of
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, but that's not what it's about.
Yeah.
The subtitle is called Why the Truth Matters More Now Than Ever. So you're right. When he came out with it, and I've read so many of his books, I was a little disconcerted. I thought, okay, I'm not really happy. But what it, you know, and not to be a spoiler alert, but what the idea about it is, how can we have 11,283,000 people be killed? And we're talking about what happened
in the 40s,
in the late 30s and the 40s with Adolf Hitler. And, you know, because nowadays, could this actually happen in modern society? Well, you know, back then we have much more access to information that they didn't have. And basically what it comes down to is if you tell a lie, a big enough lie, and you continue to tell it and continue to tell it and continue to tell it and you don't waver from it, and you can always say the same thing, people will begin to believe you.
Right.
And that's the premise of the book. And he goes through and he breaks it down to explain to kind of how, you know, things happened back. And he did a lot of research on it. But, it's a great book by Andy Andrews, How Do You Kill 11 Million People? Why the Truth Matters More Now Than Ever.
And he doesn't really take a political bias here.
No, he does
either.
Not take
These
a political
are just
bias.
Facts. And that's the kind of stuff that I like to learn.
Yeah.
You know.
It was. It's a lot of great facts, and you know, he's got half the book. It takes about 25 minutes to read, and then he's got a Q&A in the back where he was posed questions about why he wrote the book and where he got the information. And that's just as interesting also because he really has to understand why he wrote the book and the information that he provides to the people about telling the truth
mm-hmm.
is so prevalent and it's so – it means a lot right now because, you know, people – I can't tell one Do you know anybody, Tim, I'm just going to ask this question, that every time a political ad comes on TV, they're like, oh, great, another one, man.
Yay. I don't know anybody that hasn't completely made up their mind right now. I mean, I don't know what would have to be said or done for me to change my mind. I just don't know.
Yeah, an independent voter who is trying to make up their mind should not be listening to a political ad. They should be doing some investigation on voting records. They should be looking at, you know, the information that is hot in topic where we're talking about the economic issues, the foreign policy issues, the domestic issues. There's enough information out there where you can get fact, kind of what we're talking about with the Obama health care plan. You want to separate the fact from the spin because, you know, each side is going to have their spin on why it's such a bad idea, why it's such a great idea. Let's take
the
facts.
All I want is the facts. What does this mean to me?
Right. Because at that point, once I have the facts, I can make a decision to whether or not it's good for me or bad for me.
Well, and, you know, here's something interesting. And I was just talking to a friend of mine about this, and I don't know if you and I have – we probably talked about it. I don't know. But Midwest Basement Systems and PowerBrace, you know, we have two companies. And together those two companies employ about 62 people right now.
Right.
We could use about another dozen people.
Right.
And we're going to talk about that in the next segment. We're running out of time here. But we could use about another dozen people. We're holding off. You know, anybody that doesn't think this has an effect on the economy is just not paying attention. Now, here's another interesting fact, and this is fact. This is not me trying to sway anybody's vote. We do not gouge our customers to the point to where we can afford to pay for health care for 62 families. We offer health care.
Sure.
As you well know, because you're on the plan, and so am I. We do not, we're not able to fully pay for it. You know, the employee contributes actually most of the money, if not all the money.
Right.
I don't know even where we're standing right now. But if we were forced to pay that between, or even if we decided not to, all the fines and stuff, we would have to make choices about keeping our doors open.
Right.
So instead of, you know, we'd have to get under 50 employees. So 12 people on the impending day, and I love them. I'm personal friends with most of the people that work there.
Right.
They would have to take a walk.
Yeah. And, you know, just to this point before we get to the break is, you know, we bring, you know, as a small business owner and bringing a product and a service to the customer, if all you were ever going to do was just offset the cost of whatever increase was thrown at you to the customer, how can you stay competitive in the market? You can't.
Right.
You know, at a certain point, your services people would just no longer want to have you because you're now saying, well, I'm just passing it on. I'm just passing it on. You can't because you still have to be competitive in the market.
Yeah. You know, we got to look at these things.
Right.
So, you know, again, I think I've got a guy that can come on and talk unbiased, and I think I'm trying to be unbiased here too.
Yeah.
I'm just saying what it actually means for a company like mine. So there's 24 or 25 jobs right there we've just described.
Right.
There's a 25 job swing for our little company, our one little company right here in Des Moines, Iowa.
Yeah. And it's based on facts.
And this is the reality.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just the reality. We'll be right back with more Around the House, so don't go nowhere. Alrighty, welcome back, Iowa. You're listening to Around the House, and we were talking about employment and the new Obama thing as it relates to employment.
Right.
And I don't want to get off on that tangent right now because I can't say that either one of us are experts. I just know what it means to me, and I think I can get an expert in here next week. If I can't, then we're going to talk about something else.
Well, but I think we will be able to seek out somebody who can come in and talk about the facts of how it's going to affect our economy and how it would affect you as a small business owner. And the employees of companies that have, you know, just plus 50, you know, 60 employees, 70 employees. I mean,
well, you know, I mean, it's a game changer.
Yeah.
There's no question about it. I think we can just keep it. Anyway, so the reason I wanted to talk about employment is because we are a growing company, and we need people. And as far as I'm concerned, we keep on keeping on until we can't do it no more.
Right.
So we're either in business or we're out of business, and you know, hopefully the government doesn't make decisions for us that affect that business. You know, that's a laughable statement, but whatever.
Well, yeah. So. And here's my spin. If it was such a great idea, that would have taken effect immediately, not after the second election. So, all right. On to what we want to talk about.
I told you. Anyways, so we're looking for people, and you, Rod, you're the sales manager.
Absolutely. I'm looking for, you know, the kind of position we have is 100% commission-based sales, and there's plenty of information on our website. You can go to the About Us section, and there's a job opportunities section that talks about what it is to be a 100% commission sales position. What I ask, I ask this to all the people that are interested. You can call me, but I'm just going to refer you back to sending me a copy of your resume. If you don't have a resume, you know, I'm just going to tell you right now, you may be the greatest salesperson in the world, but you're not going to get looked at. I have to have certain things.
You won't get looked at verbally. Now,
right.
I have a policy at Midwest Basement Systems that if you come in and apply or give us a resume, can't do it over the phone.
Right.
We are not going to talk to you over the phone.
Right. That's what I'm going to tell you. You're going to have to bring a resume in.
Yeah. If you bring a resume or you come in, fill out an application, whatever, you will get an interview.
Right.
Regardless of whether or not we're even hiring, we will make the time. You made the time
Absolutely.
For us. We will make the time for you.
Absolutely.
And my policy is actually simple because I don't want that really great guy, you know, to walk out. Now, Rod, when we hired you, I actually stopped you.
he chased me out of his house.
Yeah, I chased you down and said, hey, man, you're a great salesman, and I want you to come talk to me tomorrow, and yada, yada, and the rest is history. But the fact of the matter is you are 100% right. When somebody just calls, I get the idea that, for one thing, they're not serious about their career. And if they're not serious about their career, what's the likelihood they're going to take their job seriously?
Right.
And that affects me.
Yeah. Applying for a position that, I mean, truly is a career, not a job, a career.
Right.
And you're doing it from your lazy boy with your, you know, cell phone or your home phone in your lap and maybe got the TV muted. Yeah, you're right. I got a question. What's your integrity? What's your sincerity? What's your motivators? If you have a resume, and this is one of the things for me, you have to have a resume that shows me that you are interested in what you can provide for a company.
Yeah.
You know, that you're selling yourself, and that's part of the process.
And here's a little tip for you. Regardless of who you are and where you're applying to work, you know, and we're not even talking about our company here. One of the questions that I always ask, and for to get a professional job at Midwest Basement Systems, I sit in on at least one of the interviews, and there's more than one. I always ask, what do you know about our company? Well, I know you fix basements. Well, come on, really? No kidding. Because you saw the sign on the door when you came in? You know, okay, that's a given. What do you know about our company? It never ceases to amaze me that people will go and actively pursue a job, and if they're taking it seriously, this is a career.
Right.
And know absolutely nothing about the company.
Right. Why would you want to go to work for a company where you have no idea what they do?
Right. That's like saying, okay, I want to work at Caterpillar, and they make tractors.
Right.
Oh, come on. Caterpillar is such a diverse company, and you want to work there because they make tractors. Why? Because as a little kid, you had a toy tractor? I don't get it.
Yeah, and how many different positions does Caterpillar have?
Right.
I mean, you're talking administrative, you're talking production, you're talking sales, you're talking, you know, technology. They have, I mean, what a diversely wide open company that, I mean.
Right. There probably isn't a position you can think of that Caterpillar doesn't have, including political people.
Right.
You know, attorneys, professionals, all across
accounting.
The spectrum.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So, but that's, you're right. I mean, when people come in and you get that kind of a deer in the headlight look when you start to kind of drill down a little bit about more information about what it is they're looking for,
right?
And you realize they don't have a plan, they don't have a goal, they just want a job. Well, there's plenty of those out there.
Yeah.
You know,
go find one.
Seek
we don't
excellence.
Want to hire people that want jobs. We want to hire people that are looking to maintain a career and be a part of something big, you know, and that's important to us because we think we have something big.
Yeah, we do.
You know,
hands down.
When you sit down with a guy and, well, you fix basements. Yeah, okay. Go up to, like, the local car dealer. What do you do? Well, we sell cars. Oh, come on. You know, it's so much more complex than this.
Absolutely.
So learn a little bit about whatever company you decide to go and, you know,
seek employment
charge
from.
In there and say, you know what, I want to work and I want to work here and I want to do it for the rest of my life. And it's because you guys do this and you're the best at it and you do this and this and this. And I couldn't believe how great your website was.
Hey, you know, and this is, I'm going to give you a little tip. And I think we talked about this one time. I interviewed a guy who basically walked in and said, you know, and these are my words, not his, that I was a fool for not hiring him, that our company would not thrive unless he worked there. And I thought, well, I understand your premise. You're trying to sell yourself as, but it came off to be such a an arrogant attitude of, you know,
right.
There's no way, I can't believe you're still in business and the fact that I don't work here. And I thought, you know what, even the most important person in the world has only got a job every 4 years, and he's got to still try to get it for another four. we've built a company up, and to look at an owner or a person who's doing the hiring and tell them that, you know, it's a miracle they're still in business, you know, thank God I'm here to save the day, is probably not going to set you in the right light.
Right.
You know, to be hired.
Because we kind of think we had something to do with getting us this far.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah.
And so we're looking for sales staff. Very
right.
important.
Yes.
And here's another thing I look at when I'm interviewing a person. This is the best that you're ever going to see out of this person.
Right.
You know, true or not. I mean, if they come in and they say, oh, man, you know, last week I've been laid up with the flu and I'm not on top of my game and I really apologize, whatever. Let's reschedule the appointment. But
right.
theoretically, this is the best you're ever going to see from this person. They're dressed the best you're ever going to see it. They're on top of their game better than you're ever going to see them.
Right.
They may be nervous. Maybe they don't interview well. But, you know, the way we interview, we drill down past that. That doesn't make any difference.
Yeah. You know, being nervous is normal. I mean, we
right.
hands down, you know, anybody that walks into an interview process and is not nervous, I would say, as a professional interviewer.
Right.
And that raises questions to me that somebody can come in and do so well in an interview that they're not nervous, you know. And then that's one of the things, it's fact-checking for us when we look at resumes to see, you know,
right.
well, great, you've had 10 jobs in the last 3 years, you know.
Fantastic.
Really good. Yeah, you're really good at interviewing. What about actually doing the job?
Right.
Why do you have?
Because we want guys that are going to be there. I mean, we want career people.
Right.
And you know this to be true, Rod, but we pay top scale for whatever it is. If you're sweeping floors in the shop,
yep.
you're making better money than you can go down the street and make for sweeping floors in the shop.
Right.
Okay. Okay, so sales positions, we are talking about very well-paid positions.
Yes.
And we expect a lot for it.
Right.
But we're fair, and we're talking about people that, you know, our salespeople wouldn't even dream of leaving our company.
No, not at all.
They love their job. They're very well paid.
If you have questions about what 100% commission sales base is and you have fear about that, you know, still, you know, make the application,
right.
send your resume.
Some people
in.
Fear that.
They really do. I mean, and I think once it's explained to them, once people talk to a person, yeah, you have to be able to budget money. You have to be,
sure.
you know, there's that's just the common sense approach about it. But to be held back in a salaried position or an hourly rate position.
Yeah. So many great people are convinced that that's the best. It is, it is truly
what
a shame.
Myth. What a myth.
Okay, so we only got about a minute and a half left. We also need office people.
Correct.
And we don't care, men, women, you know.
Yep, call center receptionist.
Call center reception, and those are good-paying positions for what they are.
Yes, they are.
We have an absolutely first-rate office manager. We're
yes.
very, very proud of our
Diane,
office manager.
Yeah, she did a great job.
She's a great trainer. She's a great interviewer, and she's a great leader
yes.
in that area, and we're very, very happy with her.
Yeah.
It took us a long time to get somebody like that, but we're very happy with her. We also need production people.
Correct.
And production people, they kind of need to come with a little bit of skill set, but they don't need to know, you know, you don't need to know how to waterproof a basement when you come in.
Right.
Or put piers under a house or anything. We train our people. It's almost better for us if they don't know a lot.
Yeah.
But if you do know a lot, then that's great too. You know, but again, we're looking for first-rate people.
Right.
We'll say with production people, we're choosy. We are choosy. We pay them well, but we're choosy because this person is representing Midwest Basement Systems.
Yeah.
And we are a team. We're almost like a family. We are not a family company, but we are a team of experts in every field that we get into. And we don't let people represent the rest of us unless they're first rate.
So for production, please stop in 5153 Northeast 17th Street.
Yep.
Fill out an application.
We're about out of time. So if you have a resume you want to send to us, please just send it to MidwestBasementSystems.com or
yep.
Rod at MidwestBasementSystems.com
we have service@MidwestBasementSystems.com.
Yep.
Both of those emails, you'll be able to get to it.
Yep. And we're out of time. So thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.